does go to the third line from the bottom. The preliminary outcome we expect on the operational budget, which is the budget expended by Treasury on personnel, rent, equipment, all those kinds of things, including the transfers, which is money that we are conduit for, which goes to other entities. It's going to be 1.549 billion. The estimated actual expenditure. One can work out the difference between that and 1.627, which is the little bit of under expenditure, part of which is personnel. Now go again to the flip again. We just summarize here because this thing has arisen in the previous presentation. In the interest of transparency, this is just a summary of the composition of the staff at the Treasury by race, gender, people with disabilities, then broken down by senior management, that's director upwards or post level. Post level 13 up to where I am, and then we talk to the vacancy rate. That vacancy rate does require to be seen in kind of the proper context. Sound like someone else trying to explain everything, but we created an extra 50 positions in the year that's in question because we are expanding our capacity. The bulk of those are in that office of the Chief Procurement Officer because we've got an expanded mandate in that area. We see that we'll be able to bring down that vacancy rate to the kind of national government average or slightly below that, and we got a kind of plan to deal with that. We are proud of our internship program. The last bullet as refers to that. In the past, a lot of people who have risen, maybe let me not say a lot, some of the people who have risen within the ranks in the Treasury entered the Treasury as interns or under the internship program. It confirms yet again the truth about the fact that once a person has been afforded an opportunity to have their foot inside, generally their chances of getting employment increase. And we have a very high retention rate, both keeping some of the interns in the Treasury, but also some of them getting taken up by other entities, be it local government provinces or national government departments. Let's go to the last slide, then we have got the numbers. This one, if you can see, that summarizes then the budget by program from 2011-12 through 2016-17. It's a very, very useful slide just to give honorable members a perspective of how the different programs change over time. The most useful way to look at this is to go to that line, which is operational budget, because that's the budget of the Treasury or expenditure that will go back 2013-14 backward, and then 2014-15 through 2016-17 is the budget over the next 3 years. You would see that it goes just more in line with the rest of the cutting budgets in government. That's it, sir. Thank you very much.
The members?
Sorry. Chair, I had a question not specifically, perhaps not really, but more in terms of your economic outlook. Perhaps it dovetails with the question that was posed to the minister. And I may also say, with regards to the minister, I was very pleased that he did say in terms of investments, liberty investment, that we need to know how we conduct ourselves at all levels. I think he then answered my question indirectly just before leaving, and I'm very grateful for that. But then with regards to this inflation problem that we have, the low growth and the very high inflation, and getting out of this conundrum, we see our debt levels, as you've indicated, risen from 450 billion in 2009, I believe, to a trillion rand now. And that brings me to the issue of the debt service cost on a yearly basis. What percentage of the budget is that debt service cost currently? And also with regards to one of the main expenditure items in the state wage bill that was percentage in terms of expenditure, and perhaps your views on how to address these issues would be appreciated. And secondly, if I can have a second bite at the cherry quickly, with regards to financial regulations, Mr. Romania will know that we still have to finalize, I believe, the Twin Peaks model. We haven't been there, but I believe we'll make progress in this financial year. But just with regard to the market conduct, the problems with the financial services board, hopefully that we will address those issues. But also with regards to the prudential regulations, the Reserve Bank, property syndications that we had, and about 32,000 people lost their money in terms of the share max issues investing in property syndications. And perhaps in the shorter term, whether we found a solution in terms of regulation, but as you know, not over-regulated the sectors. Just your views in terms of an overview where we currently stand. Perhaps the election has eroded my memory. I'm not quite sure where we stand in terms of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. You will excuse me, PG. I'm not ready to have yet. Correctly. My question is in the program for your asset liability management. Now, one of the major cost drivers in the public sector, which has been something that has been worrying me as a person, is the cost of the bureaucracy. And it appears as though there has never been any reconsideration, especially now that we have our economies contracting and so forth. I'm imagining that this will be the best time to actually begin to factor some of those things in. Let me give you an example. You now have a situation where you have a DG who is managing the DGs are managing the chief directors, the directors managing deputies, so it goes. And therefore, we then become very much caught up in the paper signing kind of thing, as opposed to productivity. And to me, I think that is a major cost driver. I know that other people may look at it as suggesting that there must be it may lead to some retrenchments or whatever, but I am saying here, we need to start. I'm looking especially in respect of the program for whether there is any consideration around the review, because this was inherited and it was never shaken up to actually meet our needs, you know, and so forth. Because to me, that represents the major cost driver. The other question that I have is around program 3, especially with municipalities. You know, when you say you one of the things that you are looking at doing is institutionalizing local government budgeting, financial management and reporting reforms. There is something that I have observed in rural areas, in particular in small rural municipalities, and I don't know if Treasury is actually, or maybe my facts are incorrect, my observation is incorrect, but I have observed that there is an inner town or city decay, where people are beginning to leave the city, the town, the center of the town, and they are building houses in rural areas where the properties are not rentable. And as a result, you have those huge houses in those places, and they are not rentable. And yes, we are saying we want to see municipalities being viable, financially viable, and so forth. Is there anything around that to review the way for the property rates so that probably it accommodates in those areas? I know that it may come into conflict with the traditional leadership and governance framework because the traditional leaders are responsible for the land administration there. But something must happen if we really want to see municipalities viable. And the other thing relating to municipalities. Yeah. The other thing that I think is actually important that I think we will have to also look at, I am failing to understand why we focus only on the financial performance of municipalities, focus only on that, as opposed to focusing on all the key five priority areas. Because right now you are going into spending around, you have challenges around the whole thing around spending, infrastructure spending on municipalities and so forth. Why don't we have a system that grades the municipalities and measures the performance of all the 5 key priority areas so that you kill the compliance only syndrome, but the compliance must go with self-delivery and impact, you know. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I want to welcome the report by the DG, but also indicate that about 2 programs that I have identified that I think at some point as we'll be interacting with the department would want yet an in-depth analysis between ourselves and the department. Program 3, which speaks about public finance and budget management and programming. 8, which also speaks about technical support to provinces and municipalities, if I'm not wrong. The one program that talks to public finance and budget management, one of the things that I think will also be critical, because this department, over and above it being a line function department, it is empowered by the PSMA to also oversee all other departments on other matters that they are empowered to do so. And if you look at the public finance and budget management, a quick thing that comes to mind is how whether municipalities and provinces, including the departments, surrender money because of incapacity to perform in all other things. Now, if you look at the presentation by the department, they spoke about enforcement on supply chain management as a priority. But I think we should also look at incapacity to spend and prioritize it. Because if you look at that month, is it September, whatever, where you start to do your budget hearings and budget review, and people want to come there in departments that you say to you, here we can't spend and all those things, you start to see shifting of monies and whatever from this department to that department and so on and so on. But it also says when the Department of Finance or National Treasury did the budget allocation, departments made submissions, and none of them indicated their incapacity. You'll only see it at the end. And it's poor planning, it's all those things. So it will be very important for us to start to look at that. And in the same way that we're dealing with the issue of corruption and what but in attendant issues of supply chain, let us also prioritize the issue of incapacity to spend. Because the ruling party, it says we are depriving our own people services that we said we're going to give. The president spoke on this and this program. We're unable to do that, and we're giving the money back. And it also hits us hard on the issue of job creation and other things. So, and that's where I would want us to look at. And you will even realize critical and priority departments like education and health also surrendering money. And I think it will be a serious indictment on our part if we don't look at that. And that's why I'm proposing here that at some point we look at this, look at the trends like they did with the 5-year, the past year's projection, how you have analyzed it. So let's look at that and then start to see where are we hitting and how can we circumvent the situation. Align that with Program 8 on the technical support that you want to give to provinces and municipalities, so that it doesn't just become the technical support on infrastructure, but it also becomes the technical, because even when sitting, I mean, learning from Section 101B, the support that we should also give to provinces and municipalities so that other provinces don't go through what Limpopo and Eastern Cape went through. We don't want to see that reverse. And it means ourselves, the portfolio committee and national sheriff, we have to be proactive. So that support, let's see how we factor it in and make sure that it happens accordingly. The other issue, Chair, is there's a slide that spoke about incentive grants. And I think around there were other things that spoke to neighborhood development, whatever, and job funds and all those things. And these are mechanisms to entice municipalities and provinces to do the bid so that they can be incentivized. So let's look at that and see whether people are getting appetite to get these incentives or it is just work as usual. And that's why I'm calling on a session DG where we can look into these good programs that National Treasury has, but also have a feel of the impact of these programs on the departments that have been identified or the spheres of governments that have been identified so that they benefit out of this program and so on. The last issue which I think you are not the only culprit on it, public works is very, very critical to it. It's office accommodation renters. It should be in our interest, all of us, to check on some of these things and see. Because over and above cutting costs and all these things that we're talking about, bird tightening and other things, in one or the other, we've been ripped off on office rental and other things. So we can't leave it only to public works. We have to be very, very close to the situation as National Treasurer. Thank you.
I saw you introduce yourself because you were here this morning.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I was just sitting at the back. I didn't have a seat. That's why you didn't see me. Honorable Singh from the Democratic Alliance. My question, I am correct, and I'm the additional member for the Finance Committee. KwaZulu-Natal government. Okay. My question is related to the information supplied in Program 4 regarding the keeping of debt and the cost of debt to sustainable levels. I notice that currently it's sitting at 39.8% of the GDP, and the sustainable level is reported as about 44.3%. I just want to know how we move up to that figure when we're sitting at 39% at the moment. And do we have a figure for this sustainable cost of debt, and what is it at the moment?
We have people of all and whatever. I know Bob Mavaso is very well South African. I have no idea why, as a member of parliament, he's sitting outside there. It made it very intimidating because it only implies parliament, which has oversight over the executive, itself has been subject to oversight by Bob Mavaso. Will the 260s guide us? Is there any rule that allows Bob to have oversight of us? There are rules about picking in committee, right?
recapitalization of state owned entities.
Yeah, that is your program.
Is there a strategic approach to this, or we do it, I mean, on the basis of as and when it's required, or is there a strategic, because at times you hear that now we are in, well, at the stage where we think that no, that this particular entity is out of the ICU, then we hear another request of recap. I won't mention the entities, some of them are well recorded. I just want to check if there is any strategy that can be taken through the committee as to how are we intending to deal with these entities in as far as our recapitalization approach is concerned. Because really, in the long run, we need to have an approach. We can't be dealing with it ad hoc. As I said, that is really one that is easily concluded that is how it is done. And the second, the central debt, the HITO, where are we? But also in our report, where do I find the report on this transaction? In our plans, in this program, because as a public, I need to monitor how I'm doing around that particular debt. Could you just indicate what, where to look for, because I tried to look for this information there, I couldn't find why. But also, let's get to know the status. Where are we standing as far as this is concerned? And the issue of the SSC, albeit there is a smaller budget cut as compared to the previous financial year, but you know, the way it's moving, I mean, tragic, it creates an impression that the constitutional mandate seems also not to be, I don't know, maybe declining in it. Because if you look at the issue of the 18 there, if there's anything that has to be maybe comprehended about 18, that's the institution where we need to look at. Because the head of the SSC has been 18 for quite some time. Yes, that's a very relevant question. Yeah, you know, older than Democrats. So, we need to know what is the vision of the department with this particular institution? Because this is a constitutional and external institution. Are we going anywhere with this institution? So, we are able to know if we are given a break. But also, this reduction in its budget allocation, how is it going to affect its functionality in as far as its constitutional mandate is concerned? And my third question is, in your plans, I looked at the plans on all your programs. I will suggest the share, because, you know, every time you visit military veterans, not especially those who are a bit unfortunate, who are from former non-statutory forces, you don't get a sense of positive impact by our resident intervention. In your plans, aren't you having a sort of maybe doing an analysis of the impact of the provision that has been made so far? I mean, to ensure that the lives of these heroes of our community, or heroes of our society, are improved for the better. And my other question, Chair, is on the Government Technical Advisory Center. Remember, there were efforts initiated in the past, I mean, to address exactly the issue of technical shortages in various spheres of government. Now, I can see the center is specifically meant to entertain that, among others. Now, what I wanted to check, how do you ensure that there is alignment and coordination between the center and those old initiatives, some of them are even, I think, stationed in the some of our state-owned enterprises and financial institutions like DBSA. How do you ensure that there is coordination and alignment? Because at the end of the day, we really need to ensure that we realize value for this initiative, value for money on all these initiatives. And lastly, Momo, I think this one, we really need to make sure that we get it right at the beginning. Legislations per year that are earmarked and need to be processed by committee. Please, be helpful and make our life easy in Parliament.
you know, just let us know how many legislations we need to process, are we intending to process this year, and so as we plan appropriately. We have requested Cindy to retrieve such information. She seems to be struggling. Please be of help, because we need to start doing our strategic plan as a committee, as far as our work is concerned. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to check, is there a systematic way of tracking what happens with large sums of money that get transferred to departments and they are on their way to, I'm going to make an example now, don't worry, and they are on their way to probably the dead party. Let's take the social grant for example. That money gets transferred from National Treasury, goes to DSD, then from DSD it goes to SASA. From SASA it then gets transferred to CPF. Now, during that time, obviously, this money accrues interest. If, no matter how many days it is there, whether because it's the last sum of money, it's about 10 billion that gets transferred. Who does that interest accrue to? Does it come back to the revenue fund? Where does it go? Or does it get lost somewhere? Or it accrues to the service provider?
Thank you, Chair President. I appreciate the input by the DG, and I'm particularly impressed by Problem 5, the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. I'm impressed that the state is now paying serious attention to supply chain management, because in my mind, a lot of state funds get lost there. And I would like to know if Treasury has a plan of actually making those who have misappropriated money in tender before return the money. Because you see, we cannot go on as if nothing has happened. There are a lot of things that government could have put right in the communities with those resources. And we must not create the impression that people can do wrong things and without any consequence. So I would like a clear plan of making sure, whether it takes 5 years, return the money of the state to Treasury.
Thanks. And I can go to jail as well.
Chair, just another submission that I want to make to you and to Treasury as well. Centralized procurement, which is a solution that National Treasury is looking at. I think it will be important for us to have a session. I'm not sure even for other committees that they play oversight. Just for us to understand how the approach is all about and how there will be synergy between the departments and National Treasury. National Treasury, provincial treasuries, how provinces will also synergize their program towards the same concept, how municipalities can also realign. Isn't it that the biggest animal we're dealing with is cabin corruption? And we want synchronization of that throughout. So we don't want to talk past each other on the understanding of what in detail this will entail. So taking us through a session, especially finance, appropriation, COPA, and other departments that will be relevant. And I think even your portfolio committees, they will want to understand some of these things, so that as you deal with some of these things and play oversight, we know what we're talking about. So I'm not sure if it's possible, it can be doable, but it's a submission I'm making to you.
Okay.
I wanted to say I support her, and also it would be good if we can get to know as well what are the legal implications of that. because you know municipalities, they are regulated by a different set of legislation from the national and provincial municipal finance management. And again, you know, there is, you also have a challenge that the council is the highest decision-making power structure in that council. Now, what happens in that case? Because all those issues will have to be taken into account when that matter is being dealt with. And I support the suggestion.
Because added to the submissions made by the school community, because what is going to happen to the local suppliers when procurement was done locally? So will they be affected? And then obviously your transport costs as well. I'm still new to that.
Nobody else. All right. Look, the quality range of questions are quite remarkable. So I've got a lot of things for the email, actually. I'm not going to deal with it. But in fairness to Esther and her team, they have raised the following questions. And the committee, as you can say, we don't agree with it. So it's not good for our researchers to spend hours preparing reports and it never gets drawn into the discussion. That's the norm, dears, I think we should have. We had to tell the researchers, we don't agree with you here, or I think we agree with them. One question they raise is, they say that cost management is something we all support, but we have to strike a balance between that and service delivery. And certainly, especially our infrastructure investments, social grants, and service delivery needs, some response to that. They also ask, the concern about the program on administration, DG, is that the program has been understanding for the last few years. Can you respond to that? So economic policy, tax, financial regulation, and research, the concern against significant under-expenditure due to unfulfilled vacancies, and legal design tax units. Again, there are issues around vacancies due to lack of capacity in the public service, pensions, and benefits units. They also ask questions about on the technical support and development finance, which is 14% of the vote. The comment is the department should report on job creation. Then they ask on financial intelligence and state security, the department should provide a progress report on the service delivery implementation and performance of the institution, as well as provide a report on the monitoring mechanisms that are applied. They're up to, I'll skip that. So those are the questions from the unit. I just want to make one quick observation. One is the FFC issue. Remember, I served for a long time in local government. Quite frankly, the sense one has is that the FFC is not taken as seriously as it should be by anybody, actually. Let's be frank. Not only Treasury, it could be argued by Parliament as well. And it's something that comes up every now and then, DG, in Parliament. And it comes up in other forums, which is, given 20 years' experience we've had, isn't it time to look carefully at the FFC, in consultation with them and other relevant stakeholders, about what exactly we want the FFC to do? What role must it play? It produces all of the publications it does. And exactly how valuable, useful, relevant is it? This thing should be disposed of for anything. I just don't know. This thing shouldn't, like, it's like lingering. Nobody really knows what the weight of FFC is beyond the words on paper and the activities that they undertake. That's the first point. While I'm on that, the 2 seconds you can, you know, I met the FFC chair this morning, acting chair, because I didn't forget he's an acting chair, so, but, and a representative of the FFC. They've got an intergovernmental conference from the 11th to the 13th of August, and wanted the chairs of appropriations committees and civic committee, I'm sure, standing committee on finance to be there. And I said, of course. But it occurs to me that maybe we should write to them or engage with their PLO and ask if a cross-section of the committee members could come too. Maybe one or two of the staff as well. So each committee gets a multi-party delegation of 4 people. So I mean, 4 committees, that's 16 people. A lot looking to that, you know. I don't know how extensive
cost us?
Because it's in Cape. It might require those who travel the public transport system of GPW to be, I don't know how to keep smiling, she experienced that side of it already. I thought those issues were resolved 20 years later. But anyway, we should look into Parliament providing. Presumably the House, they can't tell us, no, 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 we must walk there. Okay. You just organize this, whatever committee you want. Then I've got a car here. I can take three, four of you. The next thing is, on the same case pensions issue, I want to agree with this, but you picked it up every now and then, right? I have engaged with the, some years ago, MK comrades in Eastern Dulce, Maritzburg. Oh, man, it was a nightmare. I think it's improved. On the issue of legislation, look, you know, my own take, this is my personal view. The committee may not agree, so I'm not saying it represents the committee. Look, can I make something clear also to new committee members? I don't know what the rules are. My view is simple. The chair is just one person coordinated. My views don't reflect the views that even the party I necessarily come from. If there are members who disagree, provided you're not falling outside the majority party's policy framework, you must be free to say, the chairperson, I don't think it's a good idea. Because, really, I could be wrong. Or it's not consistent with Mangaung or something. It's fine. I'm answerable to the majority party, but I'm also the committee chair. The rule is it gives everybody a chance to speak. And when they don't agree with us, they're right. They were voted here. And they have a right to a point of view. But nothing stops an ANC member alerting the chair to something he might have said that's not consistent with what he should be saying. So you can disagree with me. But I really think that the thing about legislation, really there are rules that are set, right? And if you don't deliver to the parliamentary structures by a certain date, then what is that called? There's a term we used to use. You look for like rapid processing. What's that? Fast tracking or whatever. Well, look. This is 20 years later. We did fast tracking on the eve of the local government elections and such like. I don't think the committee should agree to fast tracking unless it's exceptionally exceptional, firstly. Secondly, I think also that although I think the committee is very impressive, frankly. I'm getting to get a feel for my comrades and colleagues here. Processing legislation of the complex nature that emerges from this is not like due respect to Makosi and me and all of us. We know the government legislation is politics, easy, you can manage it. Yeah, it's about tax issues, or you as COPAR experience, you have a lot of, and all these things. And we really should be given space and time to process legislation. So the quality that emerges is good. And I think we don't need cluster with legislation. For what I know, we got one bill before us, and we said next week you brief us on it. That's the Development Bank of Southern Africa bill, right? There's one bill that's coming from NCO back to us shortly. It's a minor technical amendment. We told bills and so on. It's not a major thing, right? So we can process that swiftly as soon as it comes back to us. Can you two chairs, committee chairs, executives pursue that? What is the problem now? Why can't they just refer it to us? Right? Can you check on that? So on legislation, we are asking you next week, if possible, to brief us on the TDSA amendment bill. But on legislation, I would like to suggest, maybe the committee disagrees, and I'm fine to disagree, but I don't think we want legislation on it, really. We prefer that it came for the early 2015 period, unless there's something that's urgent. And if there is, declare it now. Let's hear you. Because Des has raised this yesterday. He's very passionate about it. The past 5 years time suggested to him that, you know, the executive is not very, sensitive to Parliament's need to apply its mind fully to legislation. So on that issue. Then the issue that's being proposed by Pinky and Makosi, interestingly, I'm also veering at that. I've got a similar issue about this procurement. And of course, Makosi reminds us, actually, there are legislative, even constitutional issues that may arise when it comes to the municipal sphere. So, you know, we need some discussion, but I think what we need to do, and guided by Bears and others here, I think we need two select committees and standing committees in finance and the appropriation committees at the very least to meet with the department, trying to get too many, maybe cooperative governance might be another option. But you know, how long does Christ need to really battle, maybe it's better now with the profit system, to bring more than one, even two committees together, maybe it's better now. But I'm thinking the first is, why don't we have these four finance stroke appropriation committees and COPTA meet with you, and we set a date. What about sometime towards in August, tentatively? I don't know how far this process has gone through the cabinet. I focus on where it was, and we used to get briefings and so on. And I know Kenneth Rounds, the executive officer, procurement officer. There are people who are very cynical. They're all going to do is centralized corruption. I don't buy that. My own personal view, it's tentative. I don't have a final view. I think it's the correct route to go overall. And 20 years of experience have suggested that. However, the points that Makosi and our friends from the DA raised are just striking me now. Presumably, you're going to provide for local entrepreneurs. We're talking about BBBE. We're talking about socioeconomic transformation, which is simply BBBE. It's also fundamental restructure. All of those issues are very interesting questions. I haven't thought about them myself, and I really think Parliament needs to look at what you're doing in the process of your doing it, to the extent it's appropriate for us to do so.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've got a fairly strong team here. I can pretend when I've got the presentation that's given to me that I know everything, but when it comes to questions and answers, then it shows who really knows what. So, let me do this. Let me try and go through what I can take on my own, and I'll be briefer than I usually am. Let me start with the legislation. We have got a couple of pieces of legislation that we'll sort of humbly request the committee to consider. They fall in two categories. They are those that are annual pieces of legislation. The committee would know. I mean, it's almost like they're unavoidable in the process. Then you've got the other group, which would be the DBSA will be there, the staff about giving expression between this and so on. There's a list there, Chair, of these that I have before me now. I suspect that I can safely leave you with it, but that's not the formal way that it should get to you. It's been given to the leader of government business, so don't get me to lose my job, just so that you know. Just so that you know. So we'll do that. And then I suppose there can be iterations where the committee looks at the time it has, the depth and the breadth of what's involved in this legislation, and then we can interact and say, look, this one can you know, be deferred if it comes to that. Our desire is to have them process, but I mean, time is a constraint. Let me start with the Honourable Ross's question. Our stock of debt, just quick facts, by 2008, 9 July, thereabout, our stock of debt was about 450 billion. There was a chance that it was going to fall from that point on because we were running surpluses and so on. But of course, the moment we had the global financial crisis and the contraction that came afterwards, and then the slow growth out coming out of that, it then meant that we had to run deficits for a protracted period of time. We hope that this would narrow over the MTF. Our stock of debt now is about 1.6 trillion, which it still looks respectable. The number is big, but if you express it as a percentage of GDP, compare it to countries of at similar stages of development, size GDP, there is no really cause for alarm. In fact, I would even say that when you then look at the structure of our debt, in other words, how much of it is going to be maturing over the next 10 years, and in what chunks,
you again would not have a reason to have a sleepless night. I mean, there are slightly substantial redemptions over some of the next 5 years. But over time, one of the things that we've done is to entice those who hold our debt as it gets closer to maturity to give it back to us in exchange for more longer-term debt, which then reduces what you call a rollover risk or refinancing risk. And that has worked reasonably well in the past. That means it will always work in the future. I would be lying if I said that. But there is nothing that one sees in the environment that necessarily would change one's view and say, look, there's a calamity coming. Of course, I mean, the real solution to our challenges lies in us being able to implement economic reforms that would enable our economy to grow faster, make sure that we've got a better base, we've got more revenue, and therefore you get both the impact of higher revenues, but also just having bigger GDP would mean that we would be with it. So that's why the NDP and its implementation diligently, plus more, becomes important. On state wage bill, I mean, wage bill, save for, was it 2008-09, the year in which the wage settlement was a bit too high, and that was just blip one bad year. But subsequent to that, the wage settlement, certainly in the public sector, have not been of the kind that you'd say, you know, we have been struck by something particularly bad. If you pick it, for instance, the last 3 years, including this one, wage settlements were inflation plus two in 3 years ago, plus one last year, plus one now. So in a way, if you look at those numbers, it's not adjustments that necessarily break the bank. Of course, what we have seen over the last, say, 3 to 5 years is that as wage settlements are slightly above inflation, with wage B at the level at which it is, it's around 8-9% now of expenditure, the scope for government to hire more people so that it can have capacity to deliver more and stuff like that gets constrained. About 5-6 years ago, government would add about 40,000 more people each year, net. But these days, that number is below 20,000, hover around 15,000. That's the trade-off you've got to face. There is only so much that a nation that wants to run a tight ship, run tight, sustainable finances, can afford in both numbers of people and how much you pay them. If one increases faster, then the other one has got to slow down, otherwise the situation becomes untenable. Momo, you will deal with the other question that Mr. Ross asked about money's lost in share schemes and how regulations are adjusting to that. Connected to the issue of personnel, Honorable Kosa, you asked a question about whether we're just having people and no focus on productivity. It's a very, very good question and a genuine question. When the last wage settlement was signed, part of what government had sought to do, and I've never been able myself to go back and measure this, was to have time with the 3-year settlement to focus on performance and productivity of the civil service. So that becomes very important. In fact, some people would say that, at least theoretically, it doesn't matter how much you pay to people, for as long as you get, every time you increase what you pay them, what they give you back is more than what you pay them, or at least equal. You needn't worry too much, because there's a sort of a nice balance. And that's still the task that has got to be pursued. But of course, that's a role that falls outside of the Treasury. It's the PSA. The rating of property, not even the wall-to-wall municipalities have it been possible to rate properties in rural areas. which belongs with, again, my former minister now, in terms of the property rate act. I mean, it would be fraught with a whole lot of challenges, really raising property in rural areas. Leave the farm areas, you can find a way with them. But in rural areas, there are fools with buildings, there is no roster of valuation of property, the property is not exchanged, at least not where I grew up or where I come from still. You know, you can build a nice house, but it's worth nothing except the value in you. So there would be all those complications. And of course, I know I wanted to make a very strange quarter. Maybe I shouldn't. The beautiful houses are closer to the road. You can't stay away from the road in rural area. There's hardly anything but that you see. So you wouldn't get a lot of money. But you make a valid point about parts of cities decaying. And some cities are very smart about this. I mean, I do know that Tswane had the Rehabisa Tswane sort of project. But OPEC has done a very nice job. You should look at the area of like Constitution Hill and stuff like that. And so some of the cities take a very conscious approach to making sure that they avoid allowing decay. I'm going to just be quick to do broad brushes some of it. We tend to naturally focus on finance, but it's not because we think other things don't matter. But there is, you know, government is saying that we work in terms of the law. Too quickly, if we want to help too much beyond that, people might say we're staying into their areas. That doesn't mean that we ignore the other things. For instance, we cooperate with the Department of we did this even before our former minister was there, because we understood that finance matters, but all of these other priorities also matter. We do focus quite a lot on infrastructure. I might as well then talk to the issue of capacity in relation to infrastructure delivery. We do work with other entities to support this. The issue of municipalities losing money when they have not been able to plan properly and execute projects quickly enough. You know, the money that usually gets paid, my explanation is usually this, it's taken because it wasn't going to be spent. That's the only condition. Now, if it wasn't going to be spent, it was not going to translate to a service or infrastructure. Right? So it's people do use a little bit of blemish. So you look at the poor people that you've taken the money from and stuff. The truth is that we go through quite a thorough process with the municipality to say, over X month, this is how much you spend, show us now. And our people physically go, in some senses, to say, you say there is a project that's underway, where is it? Sometimes they find it, and then there's an iteration where people say, we think this much can be spent over the remaining period. In other instances, there's nothing. So they get told, no. We are not going to borrow money in care interest on it. Give it to you to put in a bank account. In the district, you try the simple services. But we don't take lightly the stopping of money. We don't take lightly at all. The first thing would be to try and help. What is sometimes not helpful about the system is the fact that, unlike me, I know I can't swim, so I would never jump into a deep pool. A lot of people live a lot under the illusion that because they see others swimming, they think, when I get into the water, I just do this and I will be fine. The analogy might not work. I have not understood why, when they help offered, people never take. You almost have to force it, or some calamity must happen before people accept it. We experienced this in provinces several years back, but even these days, you don't get people enthusiastically accepting help. I never know why. I mean, there are all manner of explanations, some cynical, but others. But we don't take it lightly. We are always ready to first help with building capacity so that we can avoid taking the money. But at the end of it all, if money is not going to be spent, there is usually no point in transferring it to people. I can only agree with the point that the issue of exorbitant rentals, inflated rentals, and all sorts of wrong things that get done there is something that has to be stopped. Honorable, on the cost of debt, there is a number. You know, our debt service costs now are about 100 billion. Now that translates to, say, about 2%, 2.2%. But don't even write the number down. It's hardly 100 billion. That's a lot of money. That 2% is hardly meaningful when a country is like ours and a proportion of debt is inflation linked bonds on which you don't take interest out in cash to people every holy month or periodically. Right? Because some of the what you could call a debt service that you capitalize, it's not quite. So it's a measure that lost meaning the day we had a significant proportion of our debt inflation linked. I can explain why I hold that view. So it's not a terribly useful indicator. The recapitalization of state-owned entities, a lot of them, Honorable, are not with us. They are in other departments. Very few are with us, Land Bank and the DBSA. If I were to talk about just the two that are under us, I mean, they are typically, and you can extend this to the IDC, CIFA, they really are the entities that constitute or that fit neatly within the strategic objectives of government. If you just think about, you know, infrastructure is a top priority, making sure that municipalities invest significantly. Therefore, the DBSA, you can say, have got to play in that space big time. Of course, it has some difficulty. Now that it has been restructured and its books look good, finances look good, it makes a lot of sense for government to put money into the DBSA, because our logic, or the logic is this: for every rand that you give the DBSA, they can gear it up. They can borrow anything between 2.5 to 3 rand, private sector money, and then on land. So for every rand, you can get a bigger bang for your buck. It may even, in some cases, be better than just giving a municipality a grant, although for the municipality, a grant is better because they don't pay. But if you think about the fact that if you put the money into productive infrastructure, then you've got a chance to expand the economic base of the municipality, rate base, and therefore be able to service it. Now, the point I've made about these two, in fact, it's good that I also chose the IDC and CIFA, which are outside of the Treasury, but are still very important because we want to industrialize, we want to support more businesses. The same cannot be said of all state-owned entities, I suspect. There are state-owned entities that may have been strategic at some point, but their strategic importance may have fallen over time. Now, the processes are not neat enough to always evaluate, does this one matter as much as the next one, or not at all, you know. And it's not a process that we can necessarily do on our own as a Treasury. However, when the entity exists, and for one or some other reason, its capital structure, the proportion of debt to equity, has reached a point where the entity cannot just continue without a capital injection. It is hard to look the other way. Because the consequence of not doing something may mean that you've got a very disorderly unwinding of an entity and so on and so forth. But it is a question that does deserve to be asked. Perhaps it is probably addressed sometimes to the shareholder department. You know, is your entity still strategic? Does it deserve to receive a portion of the scarce resources? You know, we do ask the question ourselves. I mean, on the Sandral desk, you will not see it in the books of the Treasury. Where you will see a reflection of Sandral is in the budget review we publish, as required by law, a list of contingent liabilities. And because Sandral debt is guaranteed, it does appear there, the total amount that government has guaranteed. We still believe, and look, it all is still there. There may be a debate about it now, but so far not necessarily by the people who hold the legal authority to change that stuff, because the roads are national roads. The legislation governing the tolling is a national legislation, as it has been tested through a whole range of courts. So I would imagine that it wouldn't be possible for a mayor to decide that I don't like those tolls near Tembisa, let me get rid of them. I don't see that it can happen that way. Government works a lot on legal authority. The question on the FFC, let me say something that perhaps members may not be aware of, maybe they are. There was a piece of legislation that the committee may be requested to consider is the legislation that's about amending the FFC Act, because there was an issue about whether it doesn't pose a governance problem that you have a chairperson who's also doubling up as an accounting officer, if I'm putting it simple. Now, which makes a lot of sense, by the way, because the question is, are there instances where in the his or her capacity as accounting officer, he reports to you that, or starts a lot of chairs, before you take things outside of, which was a genuine question. Now, the process to evaluate that and then come to amending the law and stuff like that took too long. Put that aside, and that explains the delay and the long editing period, at least partly. There is a question about how much value the FSC of today adds to the process. This is the question we're asking, Chair. And in thinking about this, I think that it may be very important to just evaluate what they have been recommending, how it has influenced things, and so on and so forth, whether it's on record. At the same time, ask the question, how best can the money that's used to finance the FFC yield value for the state? I suspect that one of the things that may be worth thinking about is whether a committee like this one and other committees in the finance family can even involve local government shouldn't on occasion say to the FFC, the thing that we want investigated on the fiscal framework in our system are ABC. These are the questions we want you to answer. Then they can do the other stuff. Yes, no, we have had conversations too. Because the stuff which does run off the mill, they have to figure out themselves what's relevant, what's appropriate and stuff, doesn't seem to cut it lately. And then it creates all manner of suspicion, are they being ignored, and so on and so forth, which may not necessarily be valid. Then we will take the question on CTEC and connection with other initiatives, please. It's wrong. Yes, all right. Yes. On supply chain management, we will dutifully tell the CPO, you just pick a day, then he can sit now. Momo and Andrew and all the colleagues, if there are things that are left that are important.
And I think it will be helpful going forward. And I think that's what the chief whip also said, that we should utilize the department very effectively. There are two things that I want to comment on, just for noting, so that going forward the department can do. One is on Sandal and the response by the DG on Sandal. I think the whip was saying, where are we in terms of Sandal, and part of it is to get the financial perspective point of it, where is it, how is it happening, and so on, which you responded on, and that will get. But to say where are we, there are other political management issues that we want to deal with. There's been an outcry by public to say we're being double charged to this and that and that. And I know some of the things Sandal is better placed to respond to it. But even yourself as treasury, you don't turn a blind eye on some of the things. You are able to say, this is where we are, but we can even bring Sandra to take you on board on some of the things, so that we deal with that thing. I should not be like an ordinary member of the public and be able to empower them and give them feedback on that. The second issue is around surrender. We know what it happens when people surrender, when departments and municipalities surrender money. But there are unintended consequences to that. When a budget is presented in the legislature, already you do projections of job creation based on what you're getting. You may be saying that does not have any implication on jobs that needed to be created and so on, because effectively people have not planned for this money and they have not spent on it, and that's why we're taking it, so it doesn't have any implication. But there's an unintended consequence when the overall budget was presented in the legislature or in cabinet, because when we comprehensively talk about job creation, we relate to it on the programs presented then and the projections that we have made. So the emphasis is not more on the technical aspect, but it's also more on saying, let's emphasize on forward planning by departments. So where are you, Treasury, to bring in a program that will assist all the spheres of government to do forward planning? So those are the things that we needed to look at. So I thought, as we sit and deal with some of these things, let's look more on things that are more progressive and are taking us elsewhere and not shoot some of the things down. I'm not saying you're shooting, but I'm not heavy on some of the things.
And then they have been in charge to reply. So I'm dealing with committee members, we are well behind time. If you can be more pointed and brief, can you go next year? And can you appoint the replies as well? It's ongoing debate.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. I want to make a follow-up on what Cindy is saying. Our understanding is that budget is not only about figures or numbers, it's about people. Secondly, the understanding is that before, in particular, the conditional grants and the other grants, the business plans are being required before money is given to them. And their monthly report that the treasurer is receiving, why treasurer is only getting the challenge at the end and then they take the money when there is under expenditure? Is treasurer not having any intervention strategy that when the reports are coming, we'll track it, that there is a problem, and then there are interventions at that particular time. Maybe we can understand that.
Let me have my focus with my answer as well. We do provide support ourselves as well. But two, we have the quarter inherited what was Siena Manje at one stage. It's now called MISA, which is, again, technical support that's available to help the municipalities. And we share the reports, we use them as a basis for saying, well, that place might need help and stuff like that. But that's the third point. Fourth, the incentive-based infrastructure grant that I was referring to in the presentation was actually intended to help municipalities plan in advance. In other words, encourage them. That if they plan in advance and they come with good plans and they present them, then they stand a chance to get more money and stuff like that. But of course, all I was then saying, once all of those things are done, then it so happens that when all of those things are done, to try and make sure that avoid the situation where we have to take the money away, it is sometimes unavoidable to take the money. That's the point I was making, but maybe I sort of got too quickly to the end. That when you've done all of the things, if it then happens that the implementation and the use of the money on the ground is not fast enough, it's painful, but it usually has to be done. When it's done with a lot of care. We don't just say, look at the spreadsheet and say, look, later you will not get the money. No, we do it very sensitively, because we know that the services lost, jobs lost, and so on. But it's also a necessary part of the system. What we notice is that once you do that, then people do get to do the right stuff, painful as it is. Well, if you don't do it, then the system will not work.
say that, yeah, so that's the tax legislation and it does need to come. I think aside from the tax issues, there are the regulatory issues, and we have a major initiative which is a Twin Peaks process. Certainly legislation we want to come to this year. There is a draft out already. I won't answer Honorable Ross's question now. I mean, there are gaps like those that he's identified, and I think it's important for the committee just to get even an input on the regulatory environment, what the issues are, what the FSB does, what the SAR does, etc. But let's come to it, because I think we clearly need a session on that. I think this last, there was an issue on vacancies. I don't know if the DG will deal with it, but certainly on the tech side there were issues, but you'll be happy to know that we've begun to replace and have appointed a new chief director to replace Keith Engel, Jan Amputa, who is taken over there. So.
We can deal with it later. I'm told by the committee secretary is in tea and coffee and it can't be waited. So it's 5 minutes. I just take the tea and coffee and biscuits home. But he said it's not allowed. So can we go for 5 minutes and be back? And I mean 5 minutes this week. Bring your tea and coffee in here and you can dunk the biscuits inside. Who's going to say you can't?
Thank you. Alright, can we start please? We're running fast out of time. So, can you welcome the team from the Statistician General, Statistical Africa? Are they going to make any input? We've got, first we should apologize, we just started in fact on time, but the DG spoke so much that we apologize on his behalf. You've been held up, okay? But obviously, I think you're aware, as we explained this morning, that we might have had a representative here who might have communicated that to you. But you know, as we are all now, exceptional times, the elections and what have you, we obviously can absurdly honor a set of deadlines that we have to meet for legal and other reasons to subject all of these three structures, National Treasury, SARS, and yourselves, to a 5 or 6 hour review, as yourselves agree, is bordering on the absurd. But this is what we can do because of the deadline, which I think you are very sympathetic with. It's nobody's fault, we're not in control. But what we have said to the other instructors is that we did a sort of ongoing personal engagement without having constraints. But certainly, it's in the foundation, it's a new committee, but for 1 or 2 members, all of us are new. Certainly next year, if you still fall within our ambit, as it were, we'll be far more rigorous in our exchange with you. And not you will too will benefit from that, because the more rigorous we are and effective, I think, ultimately, the better tool it is for you. Now, I'm not sure, basically, can I ask a practical question? The buses and town dead, what's the situation? They leave fast. Or are they laser buses, or what's the story? Quarter past five. So we should be out of here by five past five. So we're going to allocate to you half an hour, and half an hour questions, or 25 minutes questions. I need, Des and I just spoke fleetingly now, we need 5 minutes with the NC study group on finance. So really, we should try to grow to a close by 5 to 5. And our study group secretary issues here. So, okay, over then to you.
Helping us with all the logistics concerning here. If you could just get the projector up there, because my stuff is ready here. Okay, here is the presentation. The presentation is really about what statistics is about, an orientation to the members of parliament. That's what it is about. The web program 2014-2015 in the context of our strategy. That which we do and why statistics is important. That's really what we're talking about. More generally, it's about people and places. But what we want to say to you is that it's about possibilities. The ability to bring the numbers about people around places and thereby create possibilities. And I think in the recent time, you have heard us talk both on radio, presenting the statistics, discussing the question of possibilities, because that's what statistics does. And it does so by putting use at the center. We don't use statistics as quick to inform ourselves. And the members, it is important that this mental fact, which are statistics of stakes, are used. Because there is transparency mechanism, it makes it possible for you to predict. It makes the environment predictable. And it ensures that there is accountability so that you can accept this possibility for consequences of our actions. Because they derive from the same results, everybody will read from the same results, and there is general agreement on what we see. And then you can argue the options. Not about the results. The options can be argued. That in itself transforms society. So statistics is at the heart of transformation. This is what I'm coming to talk to you about, these numbers. Now, how do you use this? They are central to planning, because it's one big plan. And in fact, in 2011, when the government, the parliament and government adopted the fiscal development plan, it was at the time when you leave the census result, 49, coincidence. They monitor military development. And of course, it increases the rational space for policy. And of course, decisions that have national business in public. So it increases the knowledge base, the understanding by the leadership, citizens and the state, by looking at the same results and talking to these results and saying, what are the possibilities, what are the options? This is what statistics is about. So what is our mandate? That's what I'll be talking to you about, as I've introduced, and what is our path in executing this mandate. So I'd like to take Parliament into confidence and South African confidence into confidence that under mandate and the path that we have to follow. There are three things that actually talk to ourselves as South Africa: intensity, service excellence, and partnership. As I said, spent 2014 divided in three phases. You know that you just introduce yourself to what we have done in the last 5 years or 4 years, and this year is the last one. In the first phase, 2010, 2011, 2012, we built social statistics, the capacity created a platform for collection of statistics. And that ran on the back of Census 2011. Of course, the chair is on the back of the lawsuit. We built governance and administrative capacity and expanded corporate services, entities, and provinces, because that is what made this work. We maintained and consolidated economic and social statistics. More on that you will see as I present. And of course, phase three is we have to invest on the platform coordination. There are no consequences for non-compliance in statistics. I have already crafted in my opening statement about why statistics, but there are no consequences for non-compliance. And this very important instrument at times becomes useless. So there is need for policy framework and statistical legislation going forward. And that's what we'll be focusing on in the next year, in this year going forward. And of course, need to build statistical capability in schools, in municipalities, and in state. And of course, we are a new building. The previous members, Madam Dalia, who used to be here, visited the city hall, the Minister of Finance, then Minister Manuel, came to our office. He used to come in there, and this time he would say, but the route is too short. And indeed, when Madam Zelda came in, she had to cross into the building because it was too tall. And they said, then, why are you staying in this rundown environment? Now, finally, we are going to have a new building. It will be at Freedom Park. Development is freedom. Information is freedom. That's why we are being at Freedom Park at the time of this office. So, in time, we'll have a better roof, a better higher ceiling, and greater things are yet to come. Now, what have been our past? Our past, for the last number of years, 20 years since 1995, we actually looked at investing in learning, skill organization, technology, and people, but these things are not connected. The second stage was look at business process. How do we organize ourselves for work? Looking at governance, single management, digital production, how is this thing in space? The third is having statistical programs, finance, manufacturing, agriculture, transport. These are the statistics that we produce all the time. And the fourth place where we are looking at is how does this statistic create opportunities? This is where the level of we are operating now. Engaging with policy in the context of the numbers. What are these numbers saying? So, how do we understand economic growth and transformation? We are almost like a fab, and we produce a series of statistics on manufacturing, business saving, construction, mining, trade, finance, electricity, and tourism. And all this contributes to the growth numbers, the gross domestic product, where Joy Beer is the head of economic studies. And we release 171 products every year. So every working day, there is a piece, a product, that sells the day in the public domain. There is no free lunch, there is no free day. And there are quarterly and annual fees. We understand prices. The governor of the Reserve Bank depends on consumer price index and producer price index and manufacturing statistics before she can determine the rates. The times before we messed up the consumer price index in 2003, everybody thought that these were produced by the Reserve Bank. Only when we messed it up, they said, okay, it's not the Reserve Bank, but there's a rate, it must be the one. Of course, they're forgotten now that it's been produced by the state. The LPGI, PPI, those things that make us determine the price level are produced by the state. Producer price index, 36 releases a year, 12 releases. What the labor force serve, how the labor markets, the youth, all those are produced by services, decent work, job creation, and so on. The 14 priorities of governance find their platform in these numbers. Poverty, understanding poverty and self-delivery. General household survey, non-financial study of municipalities, we are reading that in a few weeks from now. Living conditions, income and expenditure survey. All those are surveys that contribute to understanding poverty. And before the election, we released. We had a release on poverty as well as on labor markets. And I think the elections were contested nicely on the basis, on the rock table, valid and solid information. So that the results, as we contest, options are solid. That's very important for democracy. The community service will be running one in 2016, the House Standards 2011, current labor force study, and of course partnering with different departments such as basic education in terms of children go to school, understanding health, causes of death, what kills South Africans, 560,000 deaths, 20% of those related to tuberculosis and all our diseases. That's what we produce. A number of them due to road deaths, others because of homicide and suicide. What kills South Africans? These are numbers that we produce as a statistical agency to inform the public. Of course, crime, victims of crime. We work with the police, the resources on their statistical products, but also we go to the public and ask them how do you experience crime. And we also in our report say who is the average person? Who is, what are the average attributes of a person who becomes a victim of a burglary or outrage? Those diseases are there and they inform policy. And at what time do you expect these kinds of things happen? In what neighborhoods? This is the information that they produce. KwaZulu-Natal looking at how do we embed statistical curriculum into the system of education. For instance, at the moment, the CAP is a very difficult syllabus for curriculum, and it needs in it statistics. A teacher's don't know statistics. So when the matric results come, don't be surprised, because there haven't been an effort to bring statistics into the curriculum of schools, and teachers don't know statistics. So that teachers is in the CAP. So by training teachers, exposing and capacitating learners, promoting statistics as a future career choice, it's so important that for the long haul, cannot be solved today, cannot be solved tomorrow. But if we take a strategic position into the CAP syllabi, and what is the Department of Education, we will achieve that. Take interventions. The municipalities don't understand statistics. And statisticians do not understand the challenges of inequality. That's why we created the Stellenbosch Center for Regional and Urban Innovation and Statistical Exploration, where we take our own high-level experts, like Richenda, who is the deputy director, and say, go to school for a year and study this, because it's important, it's crucial. And so far we have about 40 people that we have taken to this program. And the situation, the landscape of information in South Africa is changing. We've got to make those strategic choices. We have the institution there. And the Hispanics must start using that. Because then the intersection of statistics and that becomes real. And we can lead change. But those are the schemes. Because foreign studies where children go and study statistics in French. So that when we, as South Africa, talk about that part, we have people who we can take there who speak French. Because French West Africa did have in this position. They are very good at creating policy, but follow up and hearing it, we are weak. And that's the problem. That's why we have to learn another language. So that if we are leading, we must lead in all fronts, including language. Because language is very important for this. Increased throughput, MSCGHV in statistics. We are looking at that. What are the interventions on intensive? You have a very progressive intensive program that keeps people for 2 years. Instead of time, this intensive starts at high school. Take the people to university, bring them into the organization, observe them over 2 years, give them confidence, and run a company, employ them. That's how we do that human resources. And we have to focus on the cadre of official statistics, because it's important. Now, I said that there are no consequences for non-compliance. And we need how to create the quality framework for statistical support. And ensuring that there are no fly-by-night interior procedure statistics. We cannot be talking about labor-market statistics with some private sector interest, but say South Africa has a very low unemployment rate. South Africa has a high unemployment rate, 24%. Anyone who says if it's less than that, or 14% or 10%, it's high. And it cannot display those anywhere in the public domain. It's actually against principles, fundamental principles of official statistics. And we need to work on this and work on it hard. So we have to engage use of this in the things that we do. Well, this is the money situation 2010 to 2017, 1.69 million to 2.1 million by project, administration, economic statistics. You will be surprised that the administration is 70 million to cover things like 750 million. The amount is 2.1 billion. But the administration is 70 million to cover buildings, cars, and then we are a very strongly driven field operations program. So the logistics of paying for petrol to get people field into field is in that administration. We could do that in the programs themselves. And the administration will remain smaller. But we think that by coordinating and centrally managing that, we are gaining better efficiency. So we are playing with that kind of model. So when you see 720 million in administration, don't think that it's salary for ourselves. It's about the cars, the staff that we employ in fields to go and do field operations, buildings that we rent, and so on. What is then the platform for change? The platform for change has started here. By saying statistics are measures of effect for state action, for management of the state. If we don't have the statistics, then we cannot have the facts. We have said that there is great conditions for predictability. And of course, it engages us in managing, in being big enough being accountable and accepting consequences of our actions. And it allows us to lead from the same track. And of course, those ingredients, when we've done all those, if you don't transform, then we must be done. Now, I want to go into where it's just a few examples. There are many. I've taken where there are systemic failures. There are many where there are successes. But it's not about successes that we should talk, because it's a problem of solving, it's about solving the problem and identifying them. So I pick this because they are actually crucial in terms of policy discourse, where policy is and discordance between what you see on the ground and policy. For instance, if you look at geometry, this is where the rear bias is, those green and red things. Okay. Yes, that's where the rear bias. This is census 2001, rear bias only aiming to be now. This is where capital expenditure is. This is where policy wants to densify. Now, this is where census 2011 says the population is. So there's a policy failure here. There's no densification. There's a sprawling city. This is the list that we had this yesterday about the sprawling city. So there is a policy discordance between policy. There's a discordance between policy and action. And where investments are being made. Because if you densify, you must densify along this corridor so that this corridor stands public. But where are the houses? Right at the periphery. And this is a lot of money. This is a lot of resources. So this difference has to be sorted out, confronted. Now here are the facts. How do we confront this threat? How do we change behavior? How to transform? Now, another 1994-2014. This is a very interesting one in terms of up there is low skill, here is semi skill, and these panels are African, black, colored here, Indian, and white. Down here is where we talk about skills. Let's focus here for a moment. Here, the lower panel, all race groups. For all these years, what we are seeing here in the age group 15 to 34. What you see here in age group 15 to 34 is dramatic-wise, the growth rate in skills between 1994 to 2014 is 23%. What you see among Indians is 28%. What you see among Africans is a negative 2.3%. This is trouble. And this is the future. Those who are 15 to 34. They have these skills. Now the question is, what does policy do to address this thing? This fact must transform society. Must step on this. We must have this fact as a burning platform. It's fire. And there must be transformation. Here, mass colors, the growth has been 7.9. That's it. So the issue of unemployment in the country is embedded in this series. In part, the last part. So there is a sum of the things that we put in the public domain so that the discourse is informed. Now, let's look at the... Now, let's pass for the gentian losing square meters in South Africa. 1998 to 2013, obviously, they were growing and growing 14 million square meters. And then the research, the Americans did what they do in the housing market, and the research in heaters, and these are the square meters that we are waiting on now. It's a big of growth, but here is that mall in Wingate Park Mall. The local authority is facing the consequences of this decline in plans approved. And of course, there is a big of an after. Are not going far. That's the empty mall. It came in the business a day on the day 6 January 2020. So we are not looking in statistics about things that happen somewhere in heaven. They happen here with us. And this is how the industrial and the shopping complexes have moved to Yoyo from 1998 as where we are now in 2013. And building construction is a very important year. Education level and income. What does it say to us? This says when you don't have school, you are less likely to get income until you are about 60. And that's when you come and get better. All those years are wasted years. When you go to school in 10, maybe you stand the a chance of getting income, but only at the level of, very low level. And when you get to 10, yes, there is something that you are assured of your money, pension, and social grants. The diploma is saying, so education counts. And you leave this slide with this one here. Where there's been history. The fact of the matter is, if this fact don't cause us to change, this situation is not going to be changed by divine intervention. There's no divine intervention that will change this situation. That's where it will be. Now, if you look at the children 7 years between 18 and not attending school, then look at the girls. Family, female stage, that family circumstances. Look at that, here girls, here boys, and that's pregnant, in out of school. And then here boys say, education is useless, it doesn't take. Now, the attitude, the conditions, the situation is not one that is very good as going forward. And this fact, I suggest you that something drastic has to be done. And the regional development plan says so. Maybe in a quiet direction, you need to put this right in this room so that we understand what of Africa actually is confronted. If we look at those who are older in the book, an intervention in the poor West, because less children were not getting books, either in the subject that they do or a sub of the subject. But here it's not worse, 7.5. KwaZulu-Natal is 2.4. So, by focusing on it, people will focus out other provinces where things are getting worse. And by further, this is what is happening by further. So, less and less children, I mean, as fewer children get books as the year passes. But you leave a meal on day one, not at the last quarter. So, these instruments monitor very, very pointedly what is happening on the ground, and this is the fire that we have to get. Implementation tools. Got to get each of the people to the fire. And this is statistics is fine. So what is the matter? Where we are as statisticians, the statistics of Africa is focusing on the life for all. And we look at impact. This is where we are looking at now. And in terms of making sure that we look at impact, we have to look at the input down here. Information capital, human capital, organizational capital, and technological capital. And the information capital is the statistics that we are presenting to you. And we create the possibility of the South African, I know the whole, I understand. So that's the extent. Yes, yes. Now, the process is statistical production, statistical framework, statistical administration, and indeed, a statistical coordination. Coordination so that there are consequences for non-compliance with statistics. And we have to innovate in this context so that we have relevance. Of course, the product will continue to be producing this. And outcomes, information-led development and transformation. This is what we are talking to you about. So what do we need to do? We must begin with the end in mind. The platform for change is used. And the national agenda is around the NDP. And the NDP talks to us about the better life for all. And we must drive statistics for transparency, accountability, results, and transformation. We must invest in growth and coordination of statistics by looking at schools, municipalities, people, places, and communities. A better life for all is possible through better statistics for better plan, monitoring, and implementation. Reducing poverty, inequality, and unemployment is possible through their statistics. It is about realizing a better life for all through living and managing possibilities. Chair, I am done. Question.
Very effective, very adroit use of 27 minutes. It's really stunning. I frankly think that, what you've covered in 27 minutes, if you'd given me 45, really, it would be unnecessary. It's very good use of time. Okay, that's a signal to members.
including chair. Ask Desia and ask the committee chair. A chairperson, a committee secretary, definitely has some latitude to have more space because you coordinate and pull things together. Like even myself, right? If they put their hand, each of us, we divide the time, allowing them, because by 5 to 5, the NC side group needs to meet. By 5 o'clock, you have taken it. Remember, I've got my Corolla here. You are stuck with the bus system. So I can sit. But let's see, how many hands up? 1, 2, we take Bob first, we have to sit in 3, 4, right, so that's our 5. So, maximum 2.5 minutes each, 10 minutes to reply, 5 minutes study group, and we're out of the next 5. Right, what about statistics, right? Let's prove it. Starting with you, Bob.
All I want to find out.
I'm wanting 2.5 minutes.
Without even thinking, because that would be an understatement, on SMMEs and cooperatives, do we have statistics that would inform those departments what the status quo is, what it was in 20 years ago, so that as way forward is mapped out, that's taken into consideration? Thanks.
I would be interested in having a session with status A, social development, and probably education and finance, because we're giving these various departments money for poverty intervention and other things, isn't it? Government appropriate those. But we look at how, and I think there's a division in social development probably that deals with population, whatever, that we look at how they're able to take some of this scientific reports and do targeted intervention based on what Status A has picked up. For instance, that you don't find the minister waking up and saying, I'm doing Operation Federal or Operation whatever, but it's not informed by the poverty challenges, unemployment challenges, and that the intervention then responds adequately to that. So it's a session where I would want us to deliberately start to see an interface and not have Status A and critical line departments talking past each other.
Chair, just a general comment. I think the most important thing is that, in fact, as a matter of course, this should not just be a planning tool, but it should be an oversight tool as well. Because I'm just looking at what you've just presented to us about the skills amongst the Africans in particular, and I'm thinking about the kind of money that they are spending on sitters. Are these sitters effective? You know, and given this, it is very clear that they are not. Now, the question that I wanted to check from you is that, has there been any study conducted to check how much we are spending vis-a-vis what we are getting out of that, the value for money kind of study? Because I think that is going to be central shifting going forward. And I also wanted to recommend that probably one of the things that we need to do is to get the Status A to actually come and present to the entire, to all of us as members of parliament, so that we all understand that we are here to lead by fact, not just to lead by what we think. We lead by what is presented to us, and that way we are going to be able to measure the effectiveness of our own role as the political. We are going to be able to measure whether our political or our oversight function is effective or not.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I want to go to the skills development challenges and ask a question similar to what Commissioner Costa was asking. Over the past couple of years, university intake has increased similarly. If we are still not seeing any change in the growth of this particular amount among our chairs, what are these institutions doing, FETs and universities in particular? Because at university level, that's where growth has been very huge.
Thanks, let me appreciate the presentation. Just in a few weeks, I just want statistics general and EST to maybe identify or attribute on the misselection policy and statistical finding. Because from what I'm reading, Chair and the committee, I'm of opinion that it might be coming out as a cry for help on our side as public representatives on how we ensure that the findings of this important institution are integrated on how we plan our things as government. So then this is simply that it's a bigger issue. We can't confine it to few departments. Then it needs us then to sit as a committee as we draft our report on this institution and reflect exactly how we deal with this thing going forward. Because it cuts across plenty, it cuts across all spheres of government. I mean, look at the higher sentence. I mean, how it was planned and how it's coming out now. It really tells us that the problem might be bigger. But I want to confirm if really this information, because the last time I checked, I knew that information was centralized at the president to assist departments as they do their planning, but also to enhance our coordination efforts in the ministry somewhere in the presidency. So let's just confirm if it was happening, because we might be pumping in money into a process that is not taking stuff, which is very, very serious, I mean, as far as our development agenda is concerned. And last, how far are we as SA to prevent our I think I call it tangible retention strategies? I'm very worried I'm sitting here and if it's more pillar to hopefully and that's why it's the institutional memory might be gone in not half. So I just wanted to check the retention strategy. Is it in place? Because we call for it in the court parliament. Is it in place? Can it be brought to our attention? So as a honor, for our story, vamos a ver, but it is a peace book. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Thank you very much. And let me appreciate the report, even though my colleagues here are depressed by this report. And this does not mean I'm not depressed. But I'm saying this is a wake-up call to us as an oversight body in government to give guidance to our government institutions and departments. To say when you talk about cooperative governance, what are you talking about? Because this information is the information that is informing or should be informing the APPs. What informs you as you plan department as municipalities? This is the type of information that can be used to our benefit. Economists that we are hiring, what are they also doing? Because those are the people also who must guide us as we plan and not leave everything to those officials in the department to decide what must be done where. But I also want to share that we used to have we had a program which was called War on Poverty, and DSD had an intensive plan or a program whereby they were doing household visit and all those things. They have information and statistics. What are we doing with that information? Because we have spent money for us to get that information, and how do we marry the two? How does that report speak to what that SA is doing?
What is
the Department of Social Development? Such information, Chair, if we can marry them and have a cooperative governance, speak to each other. We can be able to help each other and help the government. Thank you, sir.
Right. One is I really think your figures about skills and race is stunning. Youth in trouble, it's actually disaster, to put it mildly. Disaster. So I'm not expecting you to reply to these things. I'm saying obviously the Department Ministry of Higher Education has been briefed. The CETA falls under them. Presumably the Department of Basic Education has been briefed about the meaning of not having statistics in schools. I agree with Makosi, it's oversight tool as well. I entirely agree with that. Also very quickly, the Joburg Metro, the sprawl of the city and so on, in a previous life, not so long ago, I had a lot to do with the integrated urban development framework that COCTA is going to finalize, I think, by the end of July, the President said in Sona address 2 weeks ago. And we were already aware of that. The thing I want to ask, this is the question I wanted to answer, has this not been brought to come before this information? What has been the response of the executive, in a nutshell, in 1 minute to this? I agree with what Pinky and others are saying. It's the immediate logical thing to say that you need to brief the Parliament as a whole. But in my experience, up to 2009, we have never had a single occasion where a single structure that I know has addressed every committee in Parliament. But the time has not come to look into bringing many of these committees together. We need to apply our mind. But I want to alert new members. We say things, it's ministers, we have to deliver on them. I think we need to be a bit more practical about how difficult it is. Most of you come from the provincial legislature, so maybe it's easier to coordinate. My experience days until 2009, it was a nightmare to bring the department is now cocked up with human settlements that are called housing there. We constantly had to postpone meetings. Right? That's in my experience. Maybe things have changed or clustering. But you're absolutely right, all of you, days included, when you say you must bring all the committees together. So at the very least, why don't we target something like a cluster that we come from? Let's start there. Right. Tomorrow I'm meeting Cedric, I don't know, I go to the instance now, Frolic. I raise it to the House chair. But when the chairperson's committee meets also, we must raise these things. So in short, you've got 10 minutes to reply. At most.
One of my staff members is up to leave exactly at 20 to 5. I don't know whether that, yes. Yes. Yes, he needs, he'll have to pay and provide either to send something for the yeah. Thank you, Chair. The question on SMEs, Irene Sargent and cooperatives. In 2000 Irene Sargent reported on this. And in 2009, we are running another one, I think, in 2013, Mama Chitemuro. And there are experiments that we are running. On all those studies, all these kids that have the say that they are offering to this, offering to that, machine users are doing better. Better than the banks. So, no, it's not working. It's not working. So, the tragedy is that when you look at the profits and the loss account of SMEs, those small micro, the people who sell things there, they actually make some profit. But they don't have the intervention that is necessary. More recently, we are actually running a pilot with the DTI, and we have a report almost ready, and we'll be running more pilots. But generally, the machinists have well been better. On the question of whether the information has not been brought to policy, I think that we are to blame as well, as I say. Because we have never really brought these numbers in the way we are bringing them to ourselves. We started doing it with the census. The problem is we have to measure, and the data is just we measure, we might dabble into policy unwittingly. Yes, we have the crystal ball. We can see what is happening. The creation of this Center for Regional and Urban Innovation and Statistical Exploration at Stellenbosch in part has brought the spatial dimension of the West that we do census case. So bringing spatial dimension of development into a statistical environment is very, very crucial. The Brazilians and all these others have done it long ago. So you find that those who deal with geographic matters, space, land and so on, those are lost with the statistics agents because they are the information infrastructure. Apartheid has told us that long ago that use of space is very effective. That's why apartheid was so effective. because they were using state as an instrument for change. It's centralist. It's not otherwise. Democracy, which is the vessel of apartheid, is the access to resources. That's the expression of democracy. It's across space. It's not space. Those resources are across space. So space is very, very instrumental. And so, there, I'm saying, let's say, it's us to blame. And we were only able to do the kinds of things once we dealt with Census 2011. And we are able to push this information in the way that is in your face. And the way we are presenting information, I would agree that it's important to brief portfolio committees, it's important to brief cabinet. Because our duty is to get a press conference, get the data, release the data to everyone all at the same time. But there are insights that are sought, and to the extent that those insights have to be discussed and elaborated upon, need a session such as this one to say, this is how things look like. This is how things are separated over time. The absence of that means that you never tackle the issues at hand. So it's very, very important. The question of the specific honorable member Pandoe, it really sits very independently. The act is very clear. The minister's responsibility is to ensure that we get the funding, prioritizes the work program. Otherwise, the work we do very, very independently. The minister cannot interfere with the work of the statisticians. So the responsibility to make sure that the information is available to yourself rests with the statisticians. And that's what we are trying to do now, to make sure that this information is available to yourself. What we need to do then is to have discussions around it and see what it implies. Of course, when, what it implies is a matter of policy. People rather than ourselves, we are just numbers. What is important is that that center, as Stellenbosch, that the SSA has created, must be used by local government. Because local government is not empowered to deal with information. Look at the IDPs, let's say the IDPs, look at the IDPs. And it's not the municipality's problem as such, it's the problem of national employees because they don't go into that local space to plan in practice. So now we need a presidential infrastructure coordination program. This may sit on this weak structure and can create more problems. But it's necessary is to carefully craft what change has to happen where given what problem. And that statistics diagnostics are very, very critical. It's a well intended program. It is a program that can deal with things, but if you overlay a good thing over a bad situation, don't expect miracles. So we need to be, I'm not saying we should be intellectual about it, but it needs technocrats that have the skills and the ability to deal with these things. Otherwise, we can actually throw good money at the bad. So, at the level of schools, we are working in the University of KwaZulu-Natal. We have experimented with teachers over 7 years now. How do we teach teachers statistics? They go back to school, probably they teach something. But the fact of the matter is, teachers don't know statistics. And CAPS have statistics in it. And exams have to be written at the end of the year. So we expect children to pass this thing. They will not pass. Let's not deceive ourselves. They will not pass. Because there is no institution that teaches teachers how to teach statistics or teach them statistics. So there is a problem there. It needs to be dealt with agency. So that this is dealt with. So that problem has to be upscaled, leveraged, and interventions have to be made quickly. In advice that unemployed youth, well, we have 4 million of them. If you expand that, we have more than 4 million, 5, 6 million. We are producing 600,000 every year who go into university, only 100,000 manage to go to university. The 600,000 are outside. So this year we are putting that they don't die, then in 10 years we have 6 million. Suppose they die. So we got to understand these things. And part of the problem is that at home these children are not parented adequately. And you can't expect the teacher to tell you that. They have to be parented adequately. So that's why you see among Indians and whites, children grow better. Among colors and blacks, they're different. A part of the parent is you wake up age at 4 o'clock, like work, at 8 you come back at 10. How can you parent under those circumstances? It's very little head. So the whole thing requires a very serious attack. Not, as I almost said, but look at the NDP, see what it says. Let's embrace the NDP, work on it, and then deal with this problem. Anything out of that is going to be a problem for us. So, thank you, sir. But the chair comes.
Coming from angles, I'm giving you 30 seconds.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to request that the meeting that we are requesting with SFSA, I'm further requesting that they should be part of the solution. Maybe let them come with the proposals or advices to how best can we utilize this information to our advantage.
I can't say that it fits into the policy area, right? Because it's a legal matter, but you're right. Okay. Over to you. 15, 30 seconds.
Yeah, Professor, thank you. I have an idea. I'm thinking because of the importance of the information that is given by statistics, perhaps they should provide information to, instead of a cluster, to all the committees. Perhaps because different committees have different needs. And then in addition to that, they should possibly be, instead of a year long or 5 years later, monitoring should be a monitoring mechanism.
Okay, very quickly, I think it's a good idea. In fact, that's what I meant. We think that we probably, I don't know who he is, I just have messing this now, some chair. With the initial idea of the cluster, then we must seek to, you know, have to shape things to different clusters slightly differently, maybe. But essentially, we'll make the same message, right? Quickly. On the issue of covering much language, we say, weekly, right? Now, I think one can get depressed, that's human, but it also can become determined and more resilient.
Yeah.
This means we have to work harder and more effectively. And do more, right? And more productively. So having said that, it's a great, great pity that we freeze everything to 1 hour at this late stage in the afternoon. But we will have further engagements with you. I'll hand over to the chair of the board to say
thank you, Chair. It's just one question which probably was directed to the likes of us with green hands. This is about succession and talent management. And I think we have realized that the quality of skills within SSA is so high that every department is looking for people like that. So, but SSA cannot employ from other departments, while other departments can employ from SSA. So we have developed a work program together with SSA to ensure that we are able to have at least some kind of talent management within it.
Thank you once again. It's been very, very useful, as brief as it has been. We thank you most warmly. And those of you who are not MC members, can you please flee? We want to meet you quickly. People get their bus, whatever happens. 5 minute meeting of the finance study group, but appropriations, people can stay if they want to.